This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackout Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. A huge weekend of racing on tap, and we're here to preview all of it. But first, before we do all that, we welcome in Chris Blair of Worldwide Technology Raceway. Now, you know, if you've been listening for a while, you know that Charlie Ante, our driver analyst, and I have been talking about Worldwide Technology Raceway, how they keep bringing the fans in, even with the COVID restrictions. Now, for those of you who aren't from Illinois, things are a little bit restrictive behind COVID-19, and the team had to get a little creative and work with Governor J.B. Pritzker's office and the Illinois Department of Health to bring in fans for their doubleheader for the NTT IndyCar Series. We talked to Chris Blair about that and what he does in his spare time. So a very insightful conversation. I highly recommend that you really listen close. Chris Blair is probably one of my favorite people in all of motorsports. I'm just going to say that. Also, Charlie Ante and I talk about all the news of the week. So much has happened in the past week. We talk about that. We preview both the St. Petersburg weekend, and we also preview COTA for F4FR Americas. As always, you can tweet us at Inside Open Wheel, email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail on our Google Voice. Now, this past weekend, Formula Race Promotions had their combined weekend out at Pittsburgh International Complex, as it's called. Simon Sykes once again continues his domination of the 2020 F1600 Championship Series by winning race one. Dylan Christie second. Josh Pearson sat third for race number one. Race number two, as we get that set up, Dylan Christie, Josh Pearson, Dexter Zuba. Those are your top three there. And also race three, Simon Sykes really trying to take a stranglehold on this championship as they head off to Road Atlanta in a couple weeks' time, takes the win. Scott Rubenzer takes the Masters win. He swept all three Masters races, but finishes on the podium. Third goes to Rob Albani, also a Masters competitor. So we do have some balance there. If you are wondering about F2000, it was quite interesting to see the F2000s. Max Easterson decided to jump up to the 2000s this weekend. It did pay off for at least one of the races. It wasn't race one, I could tell you that right now. Alex Mayer winning overall in an F1000. Brandon Dixon, Reese Everard, and Mitch Rigidas with the F2 wins. And as we are having some technical difficulties in race two, it was Max Easterson, Nick Palacio, and Mitch Rigidas winning those races. Now, again, as we said, Road Atlanta is the final race weekend for Formula Race Promotions. They will have be crowning champions then. Alex Mayer taking the F1000 championship. Mayer doing quite well so far this season in F1000. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. Joining us in just a little bit is Chris Blair from Worldwide Technology Raceway here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
If you've listened to any part of this show, you know that we constantly talk about how races should be promoted, and with the lack of ovals in IndyCar racing for next season, there's one track that stands head over heels above the rest, and that's Worldwide Technology Raceway at Gateway Motorsports Park, just outside of St. Louis. It's actually on the Illinois side of the metro St. Louis area. Joining us is Chris Blair from Worldwide Technology Raceway. Chris, I don't know if you've listened to any part of the show, but my driver analyst Charlie Nanty and I constantly have given you rave reviews on your promotion of the facility. But first, I want to get into a little bit about you, your history, and how you got started with Worldwide Technology Raceway.
Well, I've got a very long history in racing. So I grew up in Kentucky. I started my career promoting dirt track races, and primarily dirt late models, but the occasional sprint car race. And then for a couple of years, I was in Chicago with SRO Motorsports, which eventually became Feld Motorsports, and was involved with Supercross and Monster Trucks. And from there, I went to NHRA, the Northwest Division office out in Seattle, ran that for 4 years. Then was at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I was the vice president of racing operations at LVMS, managing all the short tracks, drag strips, and things that we had out there. So I came here to St. Louis, and I met Curtis Francois, the new owner, at a NHRA track operator meeting in 2011, and he told me what he was doing and what he was working on, and we started talking again in 2012, and one thing led to another, and ended up coming back here. My wife is from Northern Illinois, and her family was there. My family's still in Kentucky, so we wanted to get back closer to home with our parents getting a little older, and it was just the perfect opportunity at the perfect time.
And I actually have some experience outside of announcing. I worked at the Audubon Country Club. I still do. Since it opened back in 05. So I know about the track operations side of things. I know how difficult it can be. I helped out with the two pro races we had back in 09 and 2010. So I get it. I know what it's like. But what you guys do to it doesn't matter if it's IndyCar, NHRA, NASCAR, ARCA, you guys constantly put butts in those seats there in St. Louis. Yes, it's a racing town, but you're close, as we said, close to Indianapolis. You've got several markets that have gearheads there. What is it about that facility that you drive people in?
Well, yeah, the location is, you know, obviously is one of our greatest selling points, because when you take a look at just where how many markets we can reach in 3 to 4 hours, it's, you know, tremendous population base of diehard race fans, and the local racing scene here is probably one of the strongest in the United States. So what we try to do is our primary approach is to go after the local fans, the folks that we know are close by. Yeah, we've tried to connect with them, where in the past some of the other folks may have looked over the short tracks. We're racing fans. Our entire crew, we go to the races every weekend if we're not putting on a big show here. And we try to connect with that crowd. Again, the location, the Indy is really the best part of this as far as it goes, not only in selling IndyCar tickets, but also with NHRA tickets, because, you know, with NHRA, all the teams and things that are located there in the Indianapolis, Brownsburg area, this is almost a home race for a lot of those teams. So they like to come here, and, for IndyCar, it's just an obvious one. It's easy to hop on the interstate and cruise on down. So that's been, you know, really one of the key things that we look at is, you know, location, and then trying to just look at every possible opportunity to develop fans and either develop new fans or try to bring back the old fans that may have missed out for a few years of what we were doing.
And you do that by bringing the drivers in, whether it's before the race or, you know, after the race, to say, hey, this is what we have. If you miss it this year, come back next year. You bring them to Cardinals games and other events that happen around the St. Louis metro area.
Yeah, that's one of the things about this town is it is a huge sports town, with the Blues and the Cardinals and all the things that we have going on. But the great thing about it is everybody kind of works together. So the Cardinals love having race car drivers throw out first pitches. And the theme nights that we've done with them has been, you know, very well received. And, you know, in the off season, we also work with the Blues on a lot of programs because our seasons sync up perfectly. And so during the holidays, we're doing a lot of promotions over there with the Blues games, and because we see a huge crossover between hockey fans and racing fans, and it works out really well with those also. So having a full community effort behind what we're doing, and that also applies with the St. Louis Sports Commission. We're on the board with that group. They're always pushing us, and in addition, our local tourism groups, Illinois South Tourism, is very aggressive in their promotion of the racetrack. They put it as one of the primary properties that they like to push. So having that little extra really goes a long way.
Chris Blair of Worldwide Technology Raceway joins us on Inside Open Wheel, trying to demystify that ovals really aren't the misnomer that they are in terms of getting people in the seats. And of course, without the COVID-19 pandemic, you guys probably would have had a full slate. How did you guys think that the doubleheader worked on your guys on the operational end with IndyCar, and will we see it happen again there sometime down in the future?
You know, possibly in the future we could see that. It was a bit of a challenge for us this year because we, our original plan had been to have NASCAR trucks on Friday night, IndyCar on Saturday, on the original date. And then when the Indy 500 moved, that created a lot of challenges. So, you know, we were stuck with both NASCAR and IndyCar on the same day. And that was a very interesting experiment to try to work out all the logistics on that. But, you know, all in all, considering what was going on, we were pleased with the event. The one thing I kept telling everybody is that the number of people that just didn't believe that we were going to be able to pull it off, that was the main thing that was working against us. Because, you know, when we first announced the doubleheader, ticket sales started picking up and they were going great. And then, you know, unfortunately, the Mid-Ohio announcement a week out before that race, we saw our ticket sales really slow down. And then when it was announced that the Indy 500 would be run without fans, everything here came to a grinding halt. And so, you know, having to deliver the message that, yes, we are going to be hosting fans and we are having this race in a state that had been fairly difficult to work with through the COVID situation, as you well know.
Oh, yes.
there was a lot of things that were stacked up against us. And on Saturday after the race, I was talking to a lot of fans as they were leaving. And some of them said that they'd already had been calling their friends, telling them they'd need to come to St. Louis because the race is actually going to happen. And then again on Sunday, I met a lot of fans who told me they watched the Saturday race at home because they had to see for themselves that there was actually going to be fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. When they saw that, they made the decision at the last minute that they were going to get up early on Sunday morning and drive over here from Indy or wherever they may be just to see the race. They didn't think it was going to happen. So, I think if one thing we prove that we're willing to tough it out, we're willing to take some risk, and we're willing to work hard to pull off a race. And there's a lot of things I learned from that, too, is there's a lot of fans that we picked up for the first time because I actually had these conversations with them, that it was their first time coming to our racetrack because they always were going somewhere else. But the fact that we actually ran, they came here, they had a good time, and now they're planning on coming back. So that was a good feeling is, while we didn't have the big crowd that we wanted, we may have cultivated some new fans that hopefully will come visit us next year when things are back to normal.
And I do want to talk about that. How was it dealing with Governor Pritzker's administration trying to get fans in there? Because I know that there's also a Illinois Motorsports Coalition that was trying to, they actually put out what, you know, how many fans should be where, you know, different stages. And if we get into this stage, you know, we'll have 25% fan capacity. Or if we get into this stage, we're at 50% fan capacity. So what was it like working with Governor Pritzker to say, hey, we can do this safely?
Well, it was really a lot of legwork with our local officials. And it was also a cooperative effort from all the tracks in the state of Illinois. Whether it's the Deary family up at Rockford or it was Bob Sarch at Macon, Illinois. Matt Curl at Fairbury, everybody was working together to really heavily influence the local state representatives and different people they were involved with on the government level to at least get in front of the decision makers. And we found we were going down this road where we were going straight to the Illinois Department of Public Health, and there were some people there who were supportive of the outdoor events. They believed it needed to happen. But, you know, it's typical with a lot of political situations. There's a lot of layers that you have to work through. And we found out that there was an outside consulting group that was making the recommendations to public health. So it was a couple of months of just, pounding your head against the wall because you're trying to get to the right person. And we went down so many dead-end roads before we finally got to the right people, and we made enough noise that they recognize racetracks. And, you know, one misconception that a lot of these folks have is that, racing or sports are, they think it's all like NASCAR, where you open up the gates, you run a race, you get a big TV check, and you can operate. Well, that's not the case with any other form of racing. So we had to explain the true business of motorsports to these politicians and policymakers and health officials to just get the door open. And we made enough noise there that we were able to slide in through outdoor entertainment and outdoor recreation. And once that started and they saw that we were all being responsible, that opened other doors for us. So it was very, very challenging just to get to the point that we were able to have the 20% capacity. And unfortunately, that's where we're still at. Mm-hmm. They took a lot of the stuff that the Illinois Motorsports Coalition had put together, but we never could get them to open up more than the 20% because of some of the governor's policies. The one thing that we did do, I don't know how many fans are familiar, but there was a lot of other businesses that were filing lawsuits and challenging the governor in court. Mm-hmm. That was one thing we wanted to make sure didn't happen in the racing community, because we were afraid that would completely slam the door shut. So we basically worked together with all the tracks, and there was more than 50 tracks involved in this, where we got everybody to play on the same team and deliver the same message and work as a unified voice. And I think that was a big key to making all this happen, is no one really went rogue on their own. We all operated within the rules and stuck by the policies. And as a result, we've been able to have our NHRA race. We've been able to have Formula Drift, the IndyCar event. You know, everything really worked out for all of us. And a lot of racetracks in the state were able to survive and will live another day because we were able to get those doors open.
Yeah, and that's fantastic that we had the Illinois Motorsports Coalition that came in, stepped in, and you did mention that a lot of these businesses are filing lawsuits, and we're seeing that they're not really holding up in court against the the governor's orders, but that's for a discussion for another day. Don't want to go down that road. Want to talk about the success of Worldwide Technology Raceway. The next event is actually scheduled for IndyCar August 21st at your facility. And I'm assuming that's returning to the nighttime, correct?
That is correct. I just had a conversation day before yesterday with Jay Fry. We were talking about the format for next year's event. Our plan is to have IndyCar on Saturday night under the lights. Right now, we're looking primarily at being a Saturday only IndyCar segment of the show, so the fans can come over and see practice, qualifying, and the race all in one day. Because we're on the tail end of a very busy streak for the teams, so that should make things a little easier. Our plan is to have NASCAR trucks on Friday night along with Indy Lights. And we're also going to, the way it's shaping up right now, that we should have two Indy Lights races in one weekend, as well as the Pro 2000 cars and Indy cars. So it's going to be, and let me not forget, our friends over at the Vintage Indy Registry, they brought over 30 cars this year that, do a fantastic job. And so we're going to still have a full weekend of racing, Friday and Saturday, with even some racing activity taking place on Thursday.
I need to get down there because I always love watching the vintage Indy cars. And I've got to say this, this puts together a little bit of the schedule, because we did talk to Dan Anderson at Anderson Promotions last week. He's like, we can't really talk about the schedule. We don't have dates yet. But now we do know that it looks like it's going to be a doubleheader at Worldwide Technology Raceway for Indy Lights. And you're also bringing back Bob Jenkins for next year. I know the past couple of seasons he's been the at-track announcer.
Bob has told me that as long as he can get up to our announcing booth that he'll be here. So I'm hoping for it. And that's one of those things for me. When the first day that I ever had Bob announcing here at the racetrack, it just really it really hits you, with like a ton of bricks at the magnitude of what we're doing. Because growing up, Bob was the voice of some of the greatest things I ever witnessed in racing, and to have him here, it just really adds another touch to the race. It's really special to me, and I can't thank Bob enough for wanting to be a part of our organization and do those races.
Well, Bob's one of those voices, you hear his voice, you think, oh, motorsports. He's one of those recognizable guys in there, whether it's NASCAR, IndyCar, or whatever. But I gotta say, you and Curtis are doing such a great job over there at Worldwide Technology Raceway. I've got to get down there sometime. I keep telling my wife, I'm like, we gotta go. So hopefully next year we can make it. I know this year's a little tough for both of us, but I'm hoping next year is going to be the year we get down there.
Well, we hope it works out for you, because it really is a good time. One of the things we try to do is just fill the full day with lots of activities. And that's one of the things that, when you talk about the oval events and what we can do to make them more entertaining for people, when we're going to a lot of the street races and the road course races, and we saw it was just an action packed day, full day of activities, both on the midway and the paddock area and on the racetrack. that's what we knew we needed to do when it comes to the racetrack race itself. But, you know, I feel like the key to a lot of this is just having a lot of content. And that's one of those things that's a challenge. I mean, you could see that you could do that over at Iowa because of the size of that track. You know, it's kind of unfortunate. You know, no one works harder at promoting than Eddie Gossage and the guys down at Texas. Unfortunately, you know, a mile and a half travelable, it limits itself on what you can do for any kind of a support class. So that kind of adds some challenges for them. You know, so that was one of the things I saw that where we could do. There's other divisions I would love to be able to run here, but unfortunately, being a mile and a quarter, it's just a little bit too big. So trying to find what the sweet spot is for the perfect size racetrack in order to do so many things, I think there's a lot of opportunity with some of the oval races if we could get to that 1 mile size track in a few other places, and you know, possibly you know, bring in some of the Midwest like Midwest Super Late models, or working with Silver Crown or some of the other groups to try to add a little more to the show and really engage the oval track fan.
Well, Chris, we're running out of time. Still so much to cover, so we'll have to get you back on sometime. And I know that you're busy getting stuff set up for next season. So thanks for taking some time out of your busy day, and we'll chat down the road.
All right. Well, if you need more information, just visit us at wwtraceway.com. And we're actually starting the ticket renewal process right now, so tickets will be on sale soon.
Chris Blair, Worldwide Technology Raceway, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
More Inside Open Wheel to come after this.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Driver analyst Charlie Ante joins us. The one thing that I found interesting, Charlie, about this whole Worldwide Technology Raceway thing is how the Illinois Department of Health said, yeah, that's fine, but there are other groups that were, I guess you could say, consulting Illinois Department of Health, saying, probably not a good idea.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, with all this stuff, you've got competing forces about, you know, whether to open things up and whether to sort of err on the side of caution. So I guess it's up to the individuals to determine which side is the one to weigh more than the other.
Well, I will give you a little background. Obviously, you know, I'm here in Illinois, so I get to see what happens. So the cases are going up, and the region that I live in, because the state's divided into separate regions, we're back under restrictions, so no indoor dining. Casinos can stay open till 11 at night. You can have a gathering of no more than 20 people or 25% capacity. It's restrictive, but the reason why it's done is to keep people safe, and that's what I think a lot of people don't understand. But you know, that's neither here nor there. Kudos to Chris Blair for coming on and kind of talking about how they went through the process. And it's a very insightful interview. If you want to listen back, definitely listen back. We're going to have him on again soon, because the man is just freaking smart, you know. And it's great to see what he's doing, not only to motorsports in general, but motorsports in Illinois, motorsports in the Metro East and St. Louis. I might even try and get Motorsports Illinois on as well to kind of talk about how they were dealing with this pandemic. But now with temperatures getting colder, it's getting really soggy here in Illinois. I don't think there's going to be much racing going on. All right, so we have a lot to cover. We have a lot to cover today, but go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm sure you touched on it, but I could just listen. Like, you should do an entire episode of why they're able to get people to come to an oval race and nobody else can. And it's such a fascinating
thing really is.
From any sort of perspective.
Yeah, so definitely we'll get that to you as soon as possible. Anyway, so a lot to cover today. This weekend, there are two season finales going on. Obviously, the F4 FRA season finale at COTA. You also have the big IndyCar season finale at St. Petersburg, which I think is cool that they're doing at St. Petersburg, but that's just me. I love St. Petersburg. I have an affinity for street races. Charlie does too. But let's start in St. Petersburg. The big news there, it just came out earlier today, just before filming. Rasmussen Lin is going to be running in place of Anton Comeau at Turn 3 Motorsports, and that's because Antoine, his day job kind of pulled him away from this weekend at St. Petersburg, so he's going to be at his day job, and Rasmus is going to be in the number 3 car, and him getting paired up with Daniel Frost, holy cow, is that a heck of a pairing.
Yeah, I'm of course biased because Daniel is driving my car, of course. But yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see. Rasmus was finished second place last year in this championship.
Yes,
right? So yeah, it's definitely. I mean, he's got a good team. He's got a good car. There's no reason why he can't be up front right away.
So here's the release from Turn 3 Motorsport. They will pair together both the proven race winners who procured podium finishes at St. Petersburg last year. By the way, I've got to say, Mandy Dempsey's probably one of my favorite wordsmiths in PR because she puts in words like procured. I love that. That is fantastic. Like Frost, Lind was committed to make a season debut in Indy Lights, but that was suspended till next year. So we're going to see these. Obviously, these two, I have a feeling, are going to be in Indy Lights next year. We don't know any lineups yet, but these two are going to be fantastic together. I'm going to venture and say they're going to get Peter Dempsey's Turn 3 Motorsport their first win.
Daniel Frost won a race earlier.
Oh, that's
right.
Did he? Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. He's
oh, that's right.
I know Road America seems like it was a million years ago.
It did. It did. Sorry,
but,
Daniel.
Yeah, he started last ended up winning on like the last corner.
That's right. And I do want to make a correction from one of my blunders last week. Kyle Kirkwood is going to be the driver that's going to be taking the scholarship for winning last year's Indy Pro 2000. So I'm just all sorts of blunders lately. It's been a busy time. So it seems like 10 years ago that Daniel Frost won. That's right. He did win.
I think I should also throw out there that you mentioned how excited we are about St. Pete. So last year when I've made a habit of going down there for the season opener every spring.
Right.
And of course, I was planning on going this year when everything's just sort of shut down the week before.
Right.
But it was especially disappointing because I decided to splurge and stay at the, I think it's a Marriott, the big gigantic Marriott that's right beside the track.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I stayed at the Ponce de Leon, which is like on the driver's left of the first right-hander around the like square, sort of at the far end of the track.
Right.
I'm not sure what turn number it is, but I was walking to I was staying there last year, and I was walking to the track, and I stopped at the Starbucks in the Marriott, and I was like, oh man, this place is nice. So I decided to splurge to stay there, and then everything was canceled like 3 days before the day before I was supposed to get on the plane and go down there. So I didn't get to go. I still had to pay for it, which is annoying. And I'm a little bit disappointed and bitter that I can't be there. I guess I could, but that I'm not going to be there this weekend.
Well, remember, right? We were supposed to meet up with you that Friday for practice. Because that was that was actually one of the sticking points. I told Emily, well, Charlie's going to be there, so.
That was the moment when the world fell apart.
Oh, yes, I know. Well, you know. We're all still alive. That's the good news. But let's talk about IndyCar because there's an infographic that came out. Arnie Schreiben doing a fantastic job with that. It's the 2020 championship by the numbers. Okay. According to IndyCar, there are 19,872 different scoring scenarios for both title contenders. And 1% of those scenarios result in Newgarden winning the title. Now, Newgarden and Dixon are the only two drivers to be eligible to win the championship, and this is the 15th consecutive season that the battle for the Astor Cup has been decided in the final race. These two drivers have 7 championships combined, okay? Dixon 2003, 2008, 2013, 2015, and 2018. Newgarden bookending that 2018 championship. Here's the tale of the tape. Dixon has 4 wins compared to Newgarden's 3 wins. They both shared 8 top fives. Dixon has 12 top tens compared to 11 top tens out of Newgarden. Here's an interesting statistic, and it just goes to show you how darn good Scott Dixon is. Okay, Newgarden has 434 laps led. Dixon's only led 340.
Wow.
And think about that. Over 100 of those was at the 500. Now, now Dixon's best finish at St. Pete has been second 4 times. Newgarden is the defending winner of St. Petersburg. But average St. Petersburg finish in 15 starts is 8.2 for Dixon, and 7 starts is 13.28 for Newgarden. And the only thing I think that's helping Newgarden this weekend is the fact that Scott McLaughlin is going to be the 4th bullet in the chamber for Roger Penske.
So how many points behind is Newgarden right now?
Newgarden, I got to go back and look. I believe it's in the third. It's minus 30s. I did see that from our friend Nathan Brown at the Indianapolis Star.
And is IndyCar still doing the double points for the last race?
Not this one.
Good.
Yes, it is going to be mano.
You know, to stick on that point for a second, they have here on this infographic 15 consecutive seasons that the battle for the cup has been decided on the final race, the Esther Cup, which I guess is the championship. So I remember several years ago when Formula One proposed doing double points for the last race, and there was a series of proposed changes. Most of them were pretty popular, but everyone universally hated that one.
Right.
And IndyCar saw that and said, hey, let's take this universally panned idea that everybody hates and let's do it in our championship, even though we don't need to, because for the last, like at the time, last however many consecutive championships already came down to the last race anyways.
Uh-huh.
So they took a ridiculously unpopular idea and implemented it for no reason whatsoever.
Well, I mean, got to create drama somehow. I do like the double points for the 500, however.
I mean, as
a driver, I know where you stand. As somebody in the media, I think it's fantastic.
Well, I understand like the concept behind it, that it's the most prestigious race. It's the one that everybody says, you know, they would rather win the 500 than even the championship, which is a whole nother marketing problem that I could rant about for a while. But it has one critical flaw that is perfectly illustrated by what happened to Hinchcliffe. Was it last year, I think? That a championship contender, a series regular, could get bumped out of the Indy 500, and then they lose a massive amount of points just because of that, and possibly championship contention.
That was 2 years ago, and that was for Robert Wickens' rookie running of the 500. And remember, that was when he, because he was going for the, trying to get out of being bumped in the race, and that's when the TPMS sensor failed, that popped off in the middle of his warm-up run.
Yeah, but so the one race that's double points is the one race that you could be fail to qualify for, which I think is counterproductive. I'm not sure if that's exactly the right word, but it's kind of weird.
I mean, but at the same time, it kind of adds a little bit of pressure to pole day. Oh, by the way, what do you think of them having points for pole day? Or not pole day, but qualifying period.
I'm not really a huge fan of like qualifying points, because I think that the reward for qualifying fastest is that you start up front, not that you get championship points. The championship points should be a reflection of how you finish in the race, because the race is the game. I mean, it would be like if you had like a hockey game and they said, well, whichever team has more shots at the end of the game gets another goal. Like, well, that's kind of weird. Why would you do that?
Okay, fair enough. I can understand that.
That's how I feel about that.
It's no different than the shootout after the OT that nobody scores in my opinion. But
yeah, I mean, I guess at that point, it's you can either call the game a tie or you can come up with these ways. Figure out a winner, but that's a slight
And I'm still the Fire Stan Bowman camp. Also, news coming out this week: Oliver Askew will be in the 7 car for the final time at St. Petersburg. It's great that they're giving him his home race to race in, but I hate being this guy, but I think that there's more to that story that we don't know about. I don't think we're going to know about anytime soon unless somebody asks the right questions, because people are asking them, but they're not asking the right people.
So he's going back with McLaren AMSPMSMP. So they fired him, but then they gave him his seat back for one last race.
So here's the story. So obviously IndyCar said he couldn't run at Indy for the road courses. They decided to mutually part ways, but try and run the last race of the season if he's medically clear to live out his contract, because I'm not sure if St. Petersburg was part of the road to Indy winning the Indy Light scholarship money. It may have been, maybe that's why he's in that seat at St. Petersburg. But like I said, there's a lot we don't know. We've tried to reach out to his management company. They have yet to return our messages. We're going to try and call them so we can get a word on that. But at this point, it's like, what WTF?
So, well, I guess it sounds like they dropped him for next year. But
yeah.
And then Bill, they said, well, it's probably basically they assumed that it would be for the rest of this year, because they probably may have assumed that he wasn't going to be cleared for the last race.
Correct. So that'll be
okay.
That'll be interesting.
So it's like what we were saying in the last episode, that that they dumped him because he wasn't performing after he had possibly had a concussion. I guess it seems like that's a little bit unfair. In hindsight.
In hindsight, yes, but hindsight's 2020 in racing. We all know that. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about COTA, FRA, F4, and we're going to preview next week's episode, which I can tell you now is going to be real fun here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, we head over to Austin, Texas for Circuit of the Americas F4 FR Americas. But before we do that, I want to preview next week's show. Obviously, Nick Yeoman of the IndyCar Radio Network is going to be joining us, the Pennzoil IndyCar Radio Network, that is. Going to ramp up St. Petersburg. Eric Brennan of FanRacing.live. If he still has a voice, he's going to join us to talk about COTA. Also, we're going to have IndyCar Rookie of the Year candidate. I'm not saying he's the Rookie of the Year yet, but he is the Rookie of the Year favorite, Rinus VK. He's going to be joining us. Now, Charlie, as you know, Rinus has really rose to stardom from, you know, just notching his way through the ranks. He qualified quite well. He qualified on the pole, actually, a front row at the first Harvest GP race. Did quite well at that. And he's always said that was one of his favorite courses, but I want to see what it's like getting out there, running your first ever IndyCar race on an oval, and then learning from there. Because how many people say, oh yeah, I started my IndyCar series career in Texas?
Yeah, that's quite a place to, I mean, talk about being thrown in the deep end. As we were saying before, talking about Indy Lights, that they don't really do any high-speed ovals. So even for an experienced race car driver, I'm obviously very ignorant about ovals, but even from the perspective of like a sprint car driver, to jump into an Indy car on an oval is an interesting thing that it's difficult to prepare for. It's a remarkable thing to just sort of have your first Indy 500 or IndyCar race be at a place like Texas on one of those mile and a half ovals.
Yeah, especially, yeah, definitely Texas for sure. I mean, it's not the beast that it was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. They flattened out 1 and 2 a little bit, but it's going to be interesting to get his perspective. I know that he did the rookie test, but just what it was like out there. And I do want to get his comments on Ed Carpenter basically calling him out on television. That was interesting. A little bit of an eye-opener, but that's Ed. You know, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's a harsh thing for a driver to experience. But Yeah, he was definitely thrown in the deep end for sure.
So that's going to be next week. And, of course, this is all going to come out after Arenas's commitments with IndyCar. We are still working on that thanks to the great Bree Rents for able to work with us and we're able to work around with his IndyCar commitments. All right, so on to Circuit of the Americas, F4, FR Americas. It's a final weekend for them. It's going to be basically an all SCCA weekend in what was supposed to be the weekend for the US GP. So F4, FRA, they're going to be headlining alongside SCCA Spec Racer, SRF3, I think they're calling it now. It's a third generation of Spec Racer Ford. And yeah, Spec Racer Ford, which I think has the Mazda engine in it. Don't ask me why. Although it's so we'll call it SRF 0.5 Gen 3. There we go. That sounds better. Also, our friends at Radical Cup will be racing, and every single race is going to be on fanracing.live. I'm so excited because I love watching the Radicals. They're such a fantastic setup. We've already crowned the champions in F4 and FRA. Hunter Yaney, now if you listen to last week's show, Gustavo Yakimen said that Hunter most likely will be running in F4. We just got word from his race team of Velocity Race Development that he will not be racing in F4. We're not sure if he's in the FR Americas lineup, but it'd be interesting, Charlie, to note that the champion isn't racing the final three races of the season in F4.
So he won the championship and he kind of just bounced.
So it sounds like I do know that they're working on an FR Americas ride for next year for Hunter that is part of his championship. I'm actually going to go on the website real quick and see if there's an entry list for FR Americas. Yeah, it was kind of interesting to see that he was not in the F4 and there's no entry list. They have a full event schedule, live timing, live stream, and results. So I'd imagine that the entry list will be coming out later on in the week. Another bit of news that I forgot to mention early on from your series, the F1600s. I actually talked to Greg Rice. He sent a mass email about, you know, updates. Mm-hmm. And So Simon Sykes, as we know, runs for Rice Race Prep. He's most likely moving up to 1600. This past weekend, Trey Burke and Jason Preibel both raced for Rice Race Team. Now, Trey Burke was in the car that Jackson Lee's in. Jackson, as we know, is over in England running the Team USA Scholarship with Lo Dempsey Racing. And you know, they're doing different races and he's spending time learning about international motorsport. I shot an email out to Greg Rice to confirm what their lineup's going to be to look like for Atlanta. He did confirm that Trey will join Simon at Road Atlanta. Doesn't sound like there's going to be a third car, though. I've always been proven wrong. Charlie, by the way, Greg's looking for funded drivers for F1600 next year. So in case you're interested.
They're always looking for funded drivers. I'm looking for funding. So I really enjoy racing with my dad as my crew chief, but I'll tell you, I'm not doing it by choice.
Right. Hey, you know what? I'm looking for funding too.
If I had the money to hire someone like Greg Rice, I would absolutely do it.
So you go on to riceraceprep.com. He's looking for, from what I'm reading, and I'll read the final paragraph. The team is looking for a pair of F1600 drivers for 2021 Pro and SCCA events. Now, they are front runners in a lot of the SCCA events, including the June Sprints up at Road America, so keep that in mind. The team is also exploring an IMSA LMP3 program. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of your junior formula teams doing the same with LMP3 going into the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship next year.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. I wish I could jump on that train.
We'll talk to John Miller. We'll go out, get on a three-way call, see if he can finally coax you into sports cars.
Here's the thing. I realized a long time ago that the open-wheel train is left the station for
right.
me. I guess money coming into me to go racing has also left the station. But the thing is, you can always have a career as a self-funded sports car driver, like for forever. That door never closes. It's always open. So whenever I figure out a way to get $300,000 to go racing, the LMP3 door is always open for me. And I am very aware of that, and it's actually kind of comforting.
I have some connections to a guy by the name of Scott Tucker. He lives. The only problem is he lives with concrete and steel. That's the only issue.
He lives what?
You don't remember the story of Scott Tucker, do you?
No, but for some reason the name rings a bell.
Level 5 Motorsports. I'll have to tell you off the air.
That faintly rings the same bell.
Yeah, I'll tell you off the air. There's plenty of stories. For those who are curious, you'll definitely want to listen to the Jeff Braun Dinner with Racer story. Trust me on that one. But yeah, we're getting into that time period where we're going to see a lot of drivers going places. Let's see here. Eric Evans takes momentum from recent win to F4. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Eric Evans. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the FR America's field grow just a little bit, especially with the popularity that we've seen some of the Indy Lights drivers come in. I've talked to a lot of these teams and drivers who come in from Indy Lights. They have said, you know, this is a great series, a great format. I've talked to one driver. He's a rookie in FRA, and they said that they're staying another year. So we know of at least one open, you know, one team that's going to stay there. You know, obviously, Linus Lundqvist is going to Indy Lights. I wouldn't be surprised if his teammates come in because, Global Race Group is a very strong team in FR Americas. James Rowe, I wouldn't be surprised if he stays. You know, he's obviously one of the drivers, so I wouldn't be surprised if he stays on. But I am hearing, too, that Velocity Racing Development might be looking at, they might be the one looking at Hunter Yaney going up into FR Americas. We'll see what happens. There's going to be a lot of moving parts after COTA, and I think we're going to see some drivers in places we wouldn't expect them to. I also would not be surprised when the FR America schedule comes out that they may add a street race or two to the championship.
That would be interesting because where would they go?
One of the possibilities I'm hearing is Nashville.
Because that's what I was going to say is I have trouble imagining them going with IndyCar because they're sort of direct competition with either Indy Lights or Indy Pro.
But they still have that connection with Indy Lights because the champion of FR Americas gets a scholarship to a Indy Lights team that's affiliated with Honda.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe Honda's pulling the levers and trying to get them closer to IndyCar.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, but you know, and of course, having the FIA connected with IndyCar might be a good thing too, because it could mean some international races. I'm just grasping at straws here.
Mm-hmm. I've been reading this book about.
You've been reading. You can read books. Holy cow!
I can.
How the hell does that happen?
but it's about the formation of IMSA, and then their growth into basically into GTP,
mm-hmm.
And the American Group C, and so it gets into the relationship with all these sanctioning bodies and how they formed ACC US to sort of become the umbrella for all of the American racing series, and the ACC US deals with the FIA.
Yep.
And that sort of structure is still in place today, and IndyCar is a member, so IndyCar has a relationship with the FIA, and so I don't think that's what's holding them back from international events.
No, but I think it would make it a little bit easier because, I mean, I would imagine that these drivers, a lot of these international drivers, have to get the international accreditation if they're going to come in to, run IndyCar. And, of course, the champion and a couple of other places get super license points for finishing the championship the way they do.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's all bureaucratic nonsense anyways.
Yeah. I will say we've got to talk to George Silberman. He's the head of ACUS over in, you know, here in America. So that'll be interesting to hear his words. We've got a whole off season planned of interesting interviews that we're, you know, working on setting up. The Legends of Open Wheel comes back in a couple of weeks. Once we do get our champions all together and, you know, sit down with them for 15 minutes, talk about how their season went, what they have next. I'm really excited. Of course, as you heard earlier, Renas VK joining us next week. Our driver analysts sit down for their final thoughts of the 2020 season. Also, real quick, I know this is sports car news, but Mario Andretti, Gray Marshall for next month's Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring. Can't think of a better driver to, you know, give the command.
Yeah, definitely. I think Mario's welcome pretty much anywhere he goes in the world of motorsport.
Finally, well deserved. But anyway, so like I said, next week going to be a very busy week. We're going to wrap up basically two series seasons with FR America's F4 and all the rungs of the road to Indy, and also Renas VK. Linus and Renas sound very familiar, and I apologize about that. Renas VK going to be joining us talking about his rookie campaign. So, Charlie, got to say, I'm excited to see what Scott McLaughlin can do in an IndyCar this weekend. I've been waiting for this since the announcement came through.
Yeah, and I'm excited to go to a street race, too. That's going to be great.
Oh, my God. And it sucks it's going to be the only street race, but I'd rather it be St. Petersburg than, you know, something else. And but
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But that's not knocking Detroit, Toronto, Long Beach, all fantastic street courses. So.
Yep. Hopefully at the next one, I can get back to my Marriott.
Well, hopefully they'll sponsor us from now on after you kind of threw them under the bus. So.
Oh, I did. Well, I guess I kind of did.
Yeah.
I want my refund.
You know. That's what social media is for. So once again, want to thank Chris Blair from Worldwide Technology Raceway for joining us this week. Next week's a packed show. Make sure you strap in. I'm Jeremy Scott with Charlie Ante. Thanks for joining us. We will see you next week here on Inside Open Wheel.